So I overheard a rumor today that I was giving a non-halachic shiur. So let me dispel that rumor. I don't know where the rumor came from, but it's not true. The shiur is a shiur in Hilchas Pesach. But since the rumor was said, I don't want to make the person who made the rumor a liar. So at the very end, I'll try to give a little bit of non-halachic part also. Just a little bit of drush, a little bit of chizik. So we're going to try to do the impossible. We're going to try to encapsulate all of Hilchas Pesach into about 40 minutes or so. So rather than talking at a mile a minute, what I think what we'll try to do is kind of break down, using our experience from the previous years, what the most common issues, most common shailas are, and try to talk a little bit about, rather than talk about one topic, you know, in a total amount, try to break down a little small topics about different parts of Hilchas Pesach. And then maybe we'll open up for a little bit of some questioning at the end. So let's start with one of the areas that people always want to know about Pesach, and that's, guess what, we'll categorize as the Pesach product issues. So I'm going to tell you the following about Pesach products. 99% of the questions that you can ask either me or Rav about Pesach products, I'm going to tell you a secret. We're going to go on the same website that you're going to go on. All right? So do me a favor and do yourselves a favor and save yourself a phone call. Look up on the OU website, the CRC website, the Star K website. Any of those websites are pretty much saying the same thing if you want about a particular product. But let's try to give a little bit of some parameters, some guidelines. Of course, we know the Torah tells us that one is not permitted to eat chametz on Pesach, one is not permitted to derive benefit from chametz on Pesach, one is not permitted to own chametz on Pesach, all of the above. Chametz, by definition, is something that is edible. Anything that is completely and totally inedible is not considered to be chametz at all, even if it happens to be made from some of the same ingredients that would normally make up chametz. It's flour and water, but the food is completely not edible, so that is not considered to be chametz, and therefore one is permitted to basically own it, use it, etc. One shouldn't be eating it, but probably one is not eating those kinds of inedible foods anyway. So we're going to limit our discussion to owning and deriving benefit from. The shear, the cutoff point in halacha, so what's considered to be inedible in the realm of chametz, is what's called nifsa me'achilas kelev. It has reached a point of being so rotten, so inedible, that even a dog, forget about a person, even a dog wouldn't eat it. So such technical chametz is permitted to be used, such technical chametz is permitted to be held on into one's property. There's no need to sell it to a guy, no need to get rid of it. Included in this kind of things are all kind of different kinds of products, and cosmetics, and soaps, and shampoos, and micellar, all these different kinds of things that no dog would ever eat, and therefore one does not have to be worried about whatsoever. There were different opinions throughout the years about one particular product, and that was the issues of perfumes. There were some poskim who were concerned a little bit about perfume, because apparently the way the story goes is that some perfumes are in fact drinkable. It may sound quite repulsive to some of you, but in fact some of the perfumes were drinkable. So there were some poskim who were concerned with them. In later years, many poskim even were making on that also. So last I checked, the official OU policy is that even perfumes are okay. So that was the last of the holdouts of the machmirim. So again, it still bothers me for the last 40 years. I can't say I've been putting away all my perfumes, but all the perfumes have always been put away in our family, but mikra din, the mikra din, even perfumes are okay. But all kinds of other things, shampoos and soaps and any of that kind of stuff, deodorants, all the above, everything is totally, completely permissible. In there, for that same reason, other kinds of things which throughout the years, you may have heard different rumors over the years about maiselach with paper towels and paper plates and all those old dvarim b'talim. None of it is true. One can use regular paper towels and regular paper plates and all of that. Nobody ever ate a paper plate, nobody ever ate a paper towel, and therefore it's all completely permissible. It's because of this issue of where you draw the line as to what's considered to be edible and inedible is where a lot of the medication issues arises. So the basic rule in terms of medication is also the same basic idea, that many medications are completely inedible, particularly adult medications are generally tablets and you know, those kinds of stuff. Nobody would ever sit down and eat a tablet. They taste terrible, and therefore it's called nifsa me'achilas kelev. Therefore, it is not necessary to even check whether there is chametz in them. Any very regular, normal kinds of tablets, from Tylenol to Advil to Synthroid to whatever other pills your person is taking, all regular, normal adult medication pills are perfectly all right on Pesach, no matter what they have in them. The only possible medications that are a problem, which are not really even as much Pesach problems as rest of the year problems, are flavored medications. Flavored medications are sometimes trefus issues, and potentially on a long shot maybe some chametz issues as well. It is beyond the scope right now to tell you which flavor medications are good and which are bad. You can go onto the regular website. CRC has a website, and the Star Care has a website. Different medications which may have kashrus issues, different medications may have chametz issues. But if you're limiting yourself to bad tasting medications, they're all okay. Again, I don't want to single out too many of the regular medications. In the past, I know like the children's Tylenol, all that kind of the regular run-of-the-mill stuff that we always use for our kids is usually always all right. But again, I don't want to... If I start to list off which are good and which are no good, I don't remember from year to year, and again, you can look at it the same way I can look at it. But again, the bad-tasting medication, tablets, that kind of stuff is perfectly acceptable. Okay, so that's in terms of some of the general overviews in terms of products. Within Pesach products, so one has to be very, very careful. But I say that the most important thing to be machmer, just be careful about in Pesach, forget all the cleanings and everything, don't forget it, but forget all that stuff. The most important thing is to make sure that the products that are coming into your home are, in fact, kosher LePesach. Namely, people very, very often make mistakes. I've had some very, very, very heart-wrenching shilas that have come over the years. When people, mamish by mistake, buy non-kosher LePesach products. I'm not talking about non-kosher LePesach water. I'm talking about people who have bought breadcrumbs thinking that they were matzah meal crumbs. People who have bought, I kid you not, have made chickens, have chametzed up their entire kitchen simply because they weren't looking. I mean, again, you know, it's a mistake. Everyone makes mistakes, but these are mistakes that shouldn't be made. It's important to point out that more often than not, these mistakes happen because of two factors. They happen in non-kosher stores. Highly unlikely, and it would really be our fault if you found a breadcrumb on Chol HaMoed Pesach product in one of the kosher stores. But it happens when people are shopping in Pathmark, and again, I'm not saying not to shop in Pathmark or ShopRite, and it happens usually in the middle of Chol HaMoed for the very simple reason that in all the non-kosher stores, so they keep the Pesach aisles very, very separate until Pesach. The first day the Pesach comes, and then they take all the shirai, whatever's left over, and they throw it back into the regular kosher stuff, and or the trefa stuff, and everything becomes a balagan. You walk into a ShopRite, and you yank off something off the shelf, and little do you know that it says breadcrumbs on it. I've had people who have bought non-kosher Pesach matzah meal and have used it. Non-kosher Pesach matzah meal may be mamish chometz, and maybe chashash of chometz in it. So one has to be extremely careful to check labels. I always tell people that is the most important thing to do when you're shopping, when doing anything for Pesach. Just make sure, check your inventory. Whatever's coming in should be looked at. Don't rely on on the fact that it was in the right shelf. Just make sure that everything has been purchased properly. There are certain foods that do not have to be kosher LePesach. Again, it's hard for me to go start list down the list right now. They're all available on the regular OU booklets that I received in the mail this week. Certain things, basic things that don't have to be kosher LePesach. Certain things, of course, have to be kosher LePesach. Any questions in terms of that? So either look at your booklets or you can try to contact me or any other rabbanim about that. Over the years, there have been certain foods that have been questionable as to their Pesach status, and it's been a hot issue over the last couple of years about quinoa. So finally, the OU conceded that quinoa was permissible, and the RCBC, I think as of last year, I think also followed suit. So the bottom line is those who want to eat the quinoa can eat their quinoa. However, one has to be careful that only the quinoa that is kosher LePesach, not all quinoa is kosher LePesach, only because certain quinoa are processed in the same place, same machinery that they're processing other grains on. So one can only buy the ones, the Star K, the OU, whatever it was, different brands of quinoa that are actually kosher LePesach. One should be extremely careful, those of Ashkenazi background, in light of the fact that over the last year or so there was a push, many last Pesach already started, there was a push to actually give Ashkacha on certain things that were only kosher LePesach for Sfaradim, things which have kitnios in them. Kitnios is a beans and rice and those kinds of things, which are technically not chametz, even for Ashkenazi, but they're not chametz. But there's a long-standing custom in Ashkenazi communities not to eat these kinds of foods, beans and rice, etc., on Pesach. In Eretz Yisrael, this has been an ongoing issue for many, many years because half the country is Sfaradim. So in Eretz Yisrael, you have two different runs of Ashkochas. As I'm sure you've probably seen on Israeli products, kosher LePesach la'ochle kitnios, and kosher LePesach for non-ochle kitnios, whatever. In America, until last year, that was unheard of. And finally, last year, there was enough of a push, apparently enough people in the market who made a push that even the OU has gone into that business also. But there are certain foods that are kosher LePesach la'ochle kitnios. So one has to, again, be careful on that. So if you buying something that looks like, hey, wow, for the last 50 years I never had popcorn in Pesach. Wow, what just happened? The answer is nothing happened. You married a Sephardi. That's what happened. So you just have to be careful. In our stores, we do permit the selling of these things. We insist that they're put in separate shelves, not with the regular Pesach stuff, and they're put in with big signs saying Lech Lakitnias. But again, the signs and the shelves are only as good as your eyes are, because what tends to happen is that somebody takes it off the shelf, decides he doesn't want it, and puts it back with the regular matzahs. And, you know, it's a limit to how much the mashkichim can catch with these kinds of mistakes. So mistakes will happen in this area. So if there's any kind of food out there that looks funny, there's a reason why it looks funny, because it may not be kosher Pesach for you. So just be careful. And our stores, if I'm not mistaken, I think we will only let them sell until Pesach itself. After Pesach, we found that it became just even more complicated. Things get moved around too much. So if I'm not mistaken, I think we were just closing up on the kidney aisles just until Pesach proper. But again, so one should just be extra careful. So be careful to make sure that there is an appropriate hashgach on of kosher Pesach, those foods that need, and especially careful in terms of the realm of kidneys as well. That'll be just finish everything. You have to do all your shopping before Pesach for us. And now we'll talk a little bit about what a person should do in terms of getting their home ready for Pesach. So we'll talk about it on two different levels, in terms of the mitzvah of removing chametz, and then the particular care, of course, that has to be taken care of in terms of the kitchen, making sure the kitchen is kosher for Pesach. In terms of removing chametz, so it's a pasuk in Chumash that says, one is not permitted to own chametz in Pesach. It's an issur min HaTorah, multiple issur min HaTorah to own chametz on Pesach. Therefore, one has to do many, many different processes just to make sure that one doesn't violate this issur. One does bittul chametz, then one declares that all the chametz is null and void and ownerless, etc. That's one process that's done. Then the Mishnah tells us even that's not enough. We have to do what's called bedikas chametz. One has to check the chametz physically to make sure that there's no chametz present. The mitzvah bedikas chametz is a real mitzvah. It's a real mitzvah with the rabbanon that we do with the bracha, and it's instituted by Chazal as a way to be certain, careful that there's no violations of chametz. And the first Mishnah in Maseches Pesachim tells us that the basic rules of Bedikas Chametz are as follows. The kol makom shedarkul anichnisa by chametz, tzarech bedika. Any place which is normal to have chametz in that part of the house must be checked. And the corollary of that is, any place that's not normal to have chametz need not be checked. So let's say, for example, you have an attic. You never, ever bring the food up to the attic, ever. Your kids can't reach up to the attic, and you don't have to do Bedikas Chametz there. But if you have a basement where the kids are running around with chametz, then you have to check it. If you have closets where your kids tend to leave half-eaten chocolate bars, so then, at least chocolate bars are the way for Kit Kats, so then you have to be careful if the makom shemachnisim bechametz. So one has to be careful to check properly makom shemachnisim bechametz. One need not check makom sheemachnisim bechametz. The Rama already quotes the phenomena that existed in Europe, that the women would clean the house for many, many days and weeks beforehand. So when it came the time of the 14th of Nisan, so many women had the attitude that whatever the B'dik is chometz for, there hasn't been chometz around for the last week. So the Rama writes that is not correct. The halacha requires to do a real bona fide B'dik is chometz, even though the house was cleaned properly. Therefore, B'dik is chometz really should take a significant amount of time. It's hard to believe that a person can, different people have different sized houses, but it's hard to believe that an average sized house in Bergenfield, B'dikas Chometz is going to take 10 minutes. It's not shayach to do that. It should take somewhere in the several hour range to do a proper B'dikas Chometz. Again, depending on how many kids you have to help you. If you have old enough kids to help you, so even though they're not technically bar mitzvah, I don't want to give away part of Abu Zev's drush is over bar mitzvah, so we'll leave it for that. But suffice it to say that B'dikas Chometz should be done with seriousness. B'dikas Chometz, it's cute for the kids, candles, turn off the lights, and that's the cute part of it. We're still looking with feathers, but l'maisa, the feathers aren't going to do much for Zman HaZeh. The wooden spoon doesn't do much for Zman HaZeh. It's nice for the ceremony and everything, but the real bona fide mitzvah B'dikas Chometz requires to get on your hands and knees and to mamash check the entire house from top to bottom. Anything that's any makom shemachnisim by Chometz. I strongly recommend not to do B'dikas Chometz with a candle, because we do not handle candles so properly, B'zman HaZeh. We're not used to walking around with candles. Therefore, if you want to just start it off just for tradition's sake, that's fine. That's what we do. But then the real B'dikas Chometz is done with flashlights. That's what Gedolei HaPoskim write. That's the more correct, more efficient way of doing B'dikas Chometz. It's very, very hard to do B'dikas Chometz realistically. You don't want to go under your bed with a candle. Very bad idea. You don't want to have your kid go under the bed with a candle. And therefore, I strongly recommend only flashlights. Candles are a nice way to start. B'dikas Chometz should be done properly. One is not mechuyev to make sure that every last possible crumb that could have ever been anywhere under the sun is clean for Pesach. The biggest chametz is to get real chametz. Al, dirt is not chametz. That's one of the mistakes of pre-Pesach cleaning. That I'm not minimizing the importance of spring cleaning. It's very important. And pre-Pesach cleaning, pre-Yom Tov cleaning, it's true. But that should not be misconstrued for b'tikas chametz. B'tikas chametz and cleaning the house with chametz is geared towards getting rid of chametz. Any chametz that one is not planning on getting rid of, so then that chametz must be sold to a non-Jew. The Gemara derives from Sukkim that one is technically allowed to have a non-Jew's chametz in one's possession on Pesach, provided that absolutely 100% belongs to the non-Jew. Therefore, of course, we have the practice of doing mechiras chametz. One has to be careful with mechiras chametz, that just because one sells chametz, one cannot leave the chametz around. You can't just, sell all your boxes of cereal and then just leave them sitting in your kitchen. They have to be in a place that's what's called behind the mechitza ten tefachim. There has to be a wall, a partition, a separation of at least about 3 feet or so between you and where that chametz is. So therefore, the minhag is, we take all the chametz and you put it in the closet, you tape up the closet, lock up the closet. One should not be walking in and out of that closet on Pesach. One should not be leaving, a lot of people do this, one should not be leaving chametz in refrigerators on Pesach or in freezers on Pesach, unless you're away. If you're away with all Pesach, that's a different story. But if you're going to be home and you want to just, put some stuff in the freezer and just put a piece of aluminum foil over it, that is not really acceptable. If it's not real chametz, then you're allowed to do that. If it's something like, string beans or something, things that Ashkenazim wouldn't eat on Pesach, but not actual chametz, or if it's, just things that were floating around the kitchen over the last few weeks, but they're not technical chametz, then you could just mark them up and put aluminum foil over and stick it in the freezer or something. But if it's real, if you want to stick pizzas in, so you could be the first one to have that pizza pie on Motzoi Pesach, you don't have to wait for the long line in the pizza store, so one should not do that. One should not leave chametz in a freezer, even though the chametz belongs to the non-Jew. That's still nice.
What if it's a separate freezer that wouldn't be used on?
So then you would have to lock it up, you'd have to tape it up in such a way, so then the freezer itself would serve as a mechitz in a sense. Okay. They'd have to be taped up and marked appropriately, those big, bold, chametz signs that a kid like to print out. In terms of preparing the kitchen, of course, the most important room of the house for Pesach, so then the halacha is that one has to kasher those parts of the kitchen that are able to be kashered. Most of us are not doing any real kashering today. When I say real kashering, in the olden days in Europe, people didn't have extra silverware, so they used the same chametz silverware in Pesach also, so they just kashered everything. So most of us are not doing that, and I would recommend not to do that. I recommend that everyone should have separate dishes and silverware. Everything should be separate for Pesach. We're able to afford that. But certain parts of the kitchen have to be kashered. You're not going to buy a new sink for Pesach, you're not going to buy a new oven for Pesach. So certain parts of the kitchen are obviously going to be kashered. How does one go about kashering just the standard things in the kitchen? So the methods for kashering are fairly straightforward. We'll go from the oven. Start off with the oven. So the oven was a big, big machlokes in the poskim many, many years as to how exactly to kasher our ovens. When I say our ovens, I mean non-self-cleaning ovens, which I find not relevant for most of us anymore. But in the old-style ovens that I grew up with, so some poskim were of the opinion that they can't be kashered, basically practically can't be kashered, and therefore you would have to have what's called an oven insert. So you would have to have this little box that goes inside the oven. I still have those nightmares of as a kid when the food was never really fully cooked because they never really worked too well. So that was the old style of the oven inserts. And then there were other poskim who permitted kashering the oven by just turning it on to the highest for an hour or so, and they felt that if the cleaning it and burning it out for an hour, that was sufficient. Bizman Azeh, most of us have self-cleaning ovens, and therefore they are significantly better than the old ovens. The temperature reaches much, much higher than the regular old-style ovens, and therefore we assume that if you put on a self-cleaning oven for one cycle, that should be perfectly okay. So that's what I tell everybody to do. Just turn on your oven, put it off self-cleaning 3-4 hours, whatever it is, and shine, and that's perfectly acceptable in terms of kashering your oven. In terms of kashering the stovetop, so when kashering the stovetop, the concern is that those burners, those grates that the chametz pots were on, so now you want to put your Pesach pots on, so there's a big question whether that's even a concern altogether, whether there's anything really to be worried about that. And the minhag Yisrael is to assume that it is potentially a problem, and therefore the method to kasher it is as follows. There are a few methods. One way is to take those grates and throw them into the self-cleaning oven. That's an easy way of doing it for those who like to do it that way. Those who are nervous about doing it and don't want claim that they don't want to ruin the enamel on their burners, I don't know whether it's true or not, but those who are nervous about doing it, so then they can do it the old-style way. The old-style way of doing it is a little bit slower, but does the same trick, is that you take a pot of water and you turn on one one burner to the highest, and you put the pot of water on for about 15 minutes. So it makes the burner really, really, really hot. Then you turn it off, and you take that pot of water, move it over to the next one, turn it on, 15 minutes, make it really, really hot. The reason why you do one at a time, two at a time, don't do all four at a time, is because you will melt the enamel on the stovetop, as I did my first Pesach in California, my in-law's house. So after that, in fact, I did it every year at my mother's house. I never got into trouble for that, but I did get into trouble for doing that at my in-law's house. So therefore, we don't do that anymore. So we just do two at a time, and that's fine. Yeah, see, three hands up. I didn't say anything yet. Okay, yeah. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Makrid, no, you don't have to wait. For self-cleaning ovens, you don't have to wait. When we kosher, what's called libun, with such intense heat, you don't have to wait 24 hours. 24 hours is for sinks and things which are the only koshering with hot water, then the minute gets to wait for 24 hours. Yeah, we also have, I don't know, does it make a difference? I don't know. What's the difference between the two? Because we want to be firmer, so we also do 4 hours. Whatever the highest is, the mach betavah labracha. Yeah, so the meaning for the aluminum foil came from the following. It came from probably a misinformation, but don't feel bad because we do it also. It probably came from the fact that at one time people used to claim that the door of the oven doesn't get as hot as the rest of the oven. So there was a chashash that the door maybe not be getting what's the perfect libun like the rest of the oven is. To the best of my knowledge is that rumor was totally completely unfounded. There was no truth to it. That's what I was told. But as a zecha to the good old days when we believed that way, we also put a piece of aluminum foil there also. Because, you know, it just doesn't look like Pesach without aluminum foil on the door. But Benay knew it's not really necessary. Yeah, so that is a good idea, right? So besides the grates itself, the grates is really where the pots are actually touching. Any area around? Huh? Afterwards, we're going to the kitchen, okay? Let's save all the real practical questions in terms of visual aids. We're going to the kitchen afterwards, okay? My wife will kill me for that one, but we'll go to the kitchen. Right. Yeah, I'm weary to do that because I think you're gonna. It's like taking a bluff. I would be nervous to do it that way only because I think that the heat is gonna ruin. Have you done it that way? You tried it? Nothing happens. Okay, great. Okay. Yeah. Either way is fine. Any of those ways is fine. Okay. So again, so we have the oven down pat. We got the stove down pat. Clean it off. It's good. Okay. Okay. We're getting very focused on the stove handle. Well, let's move along. Okay. We'll get enough time for questions at the end. Okay. Then we move into the sink, to the kitchen sink. So how do you kosher your sink? So it depends who you ask in this one. So I'm going to tell you what I think you should do, what we do in our house. There are different kinds of sinks. Most of our sinks today are all of us have stainless steel sinks. In the old days that we grew up with porcelain sinks. So I remember as a kid with the porcelain sinks, so we used to have the sink insert. It worked about as good as the oven insert because we'd always stuff up. Nobody ever thought to make the holes big enough for the water to actually leave. Because you had like this like tremendous sink thing, and you had like this hole like about that big. I never forget my mother. They figured it out. It took 30 years to figure it out. I remember my mother, she said, Rachmanis, so after the Seder, she'd be sitting and trying to wash the dishes, and the stuff would overflow, and it'd be going out, and flooding, and you know, I was seeing Shirashirim, and I had gurgling in the back. It was a very, very, very bad picture. But anyway, Baruch Hashem, we moved past that point. So there's nothing like those Pesach memories. I'm going to talk about that afterwards. I want to impress that. So that's going to give you a different chizuk, but it's something that you're going to give to your kids, but we'll talk about it afterwards. Anyway. So, The our sinks today, the stainless steel sinks, so I think we should do it as follows. Just wait 24 hours from using it for hot chametz. You can wash it until it's done with cold water, that's fine. Try to refrain 24 hours from using it for hot chametz. And then take, and here you want to save some time and effort, take those pots of water that you just used to kash your stovetop, wait till the pots are boiling, really geschmack of boiling, and then pour them all around the sink. This is the part of kashering that I always insist that my kids watch, because I want them to see how to do it, because I don't want someone to say in 30 years from now that my kids are going to ask a shayla how to kasher a sink, that what happened, nobody trained them how to kasher a sink. So I insist every year that they watch it, but I don't let them do it, because it's dangerous, but you have to just be careful. So just be careful. We always have the ongoing joke in my house, is that as I take the pots of water off, you know, holding it with all the towels and everything, I always forget to take my glasses off, and then I start to fog up, and then one of my kids has to yank my glasses off, and I can't see anything, and it spills all over the place, and then my wife starts coming with the towels and wipe it. It's always a to-do, so whatever it is. It's a moment of a lot of tension, so let's go, Baruch Hashem, we accomplish it. Okay, anyway, so it's a good idea, seriously, if you have the extra water left over from the, so it can help. So just take big pots of water and pour it all over the place. We use the Pesach pots for it to just, Meikra din, you can really use the Chametz pots. If you haven't used the pots for 24 hours, you can be sure use them. But I always take the Pesach pots and just use them and just pour it all over, pour it down the drain and all around. And it's a good idea to get separate filters in the sink, you know, just the disposable ones for Pesach. It's easier to do that than to start to clean and to kasher them. But again, so it's not that hard to kasher the sink. Okay, in terms of the other... Yeah. Good, look, we're gonna take a look. Yeah. Assuming I remember what we did last year. My wife should be back soon. So maybe she'll actually tell you what we really did last year before I start shooting off my mouth about what I think we did last year. Okay. Then we get to the refrigerators. The refrigerator is very, very simple. You just have to clean the refrigerator, that's it. Because that minig Yisrael is that you put down your cover or shelving, you put some tchotchkes there or something. So is it necessary? Mikra din? Probably not, but that's what people do. That's what our mothers did, so she continued to do that. Now, Baruch Hashem, it's become much easier. They have the pre-made little plastic sheets. I remember as a kid, come on, you remember, you lay the whole aluminum foil with aluminum foil, and then right before you forgot, then you poke a couple of holes in the middle to get the air to flow through it. Otherwise, all the food spoils. So between the spoiled food and the food that wasn't cooked in the oven and the water, Baruch Hashem, we progressed in our Pesach cleaning over the years. Okay. Showing other things, other parts of the kitchen that people generally tend to ask. People generally tend to ask about high chairs. So high chairs, try to just clean them, put down something, if it's aluminum foil or something, not mechuyev to go buy new high chairs or something, and showing. Okay. Any last question about the kitchen, just particularly the kitchen, besides the stovetops? Countdown, I forgot to count that. Can you believe it? I forgot to count that. Okay, I guess I have a psychological block. I have a psychological block against countertops. So countertops was a big machlokes. It's still running a big machlokes. There are some poskim who permitted the kashering of certain kinds of countertops, the granite kinds, any stone, basically any stone material countertop, for simply pouring boiling water over the countertop. There were some who permitted that. There were other poskim who felt that was problematic based on certain technicalities and insisted that the countertops have to be covered. So yesh v'yesh. So I'm not going to criticize those who don't cover the countertops. In our home, we cover the countertops. I don't bother kashering. I don't pour any boiling water or anything. We just cover everything with the old style, whatever it is, plastic, whatever it is, and just cover it as best as possible. Okay, anything else about countertops? I knew that was going to be here. Yeah, so there are some who permitted to see. Yeah, maybe better, maybe a little bit better than that one, maybe. Again, either way, those who cautious countertops definitely have what to rely on, those who don't. Tavalechem bracha. Everyone should get a bracha, yeah. Yeah, that's what we do, yeah. We just put regular countertops. Yeah. We used to have these big, fat plastic sheets when I was a kid. You know, this contact paper does the trick. How high did that get? Whatever the pots go down on, that's all. Whatever the food goes down on. The food doesn't touch the... Just clean it. It's clean. It's fine. Okay. Again, you know, the bottom line is, many of these things, again... I don't mean to minimize the significance of kashering. Once you try to kasher, if by some chance a little bit of your countertop wasn't covered, or a little bit of your, you know, your aluminum foil fell, you know, fell off in your, and your, it's not going to chametz up your whole house. You know, it's realistically, it's not going to be terrible. If you kasher your, if you turn on your self cleaning oven, that's the only thing that could, you know, if you don't kasher your oven, that could be a serious problem. So you should kasher your oven and try as best as you can to kasher your sink properly. And again, don't drive yourselves mamish crazy over this. Once you try to kasher as best as one is able to.
Okay. Are we into questions yet in general, or just
like? No, let's stick to this topic, and I'm all. Oh, okay, in general.
No, since it's like you said that, like technically, our halacha is the only thought of looking places are coming down. Right. So a lot of us have kitchens across from the empty room area. So like my kids' toys are all in there, and I would love to find that no one.
Right. You have to assume that if you have little kids around, that your whole house is almost like a makom shel machnis bechametz. Any place that's accessible. You should look. You're not mechuyev. You know, you're not mechuyev to give each of your toys a bath before Pesach.
It's
not.
But
just open up. Open it up and see. Is there any chametz? Is there a piece of pizza in here? Is there you know, a piece of cake in here? Pretzels.
Or?
You have to know. Yeah. No. I haven't used a feather and spoon in 20 years. You have to buy it. You know how many I have in my parents' house? I have enough from here till B.S. Hagoyel. I have enough of those. They came from Yeshiva Beis Shrag in Muncie. Used to send 30 of them every year. I have hundreds of them together. I have boxes of Hanukkah candles from when I was, before I was born, sitting in my parents' house. With the old charoses is also sitting. Okay. The vent, I clean it out. Just wash it off, clean it off.
What's the status of keel and loaf, like kidneys, in terms of like, can you have kidneys under keel?
If you eat with spotty relatives, mikra, then you can't eat from stuff that was cooked in kidneys. Yeah. You should try not to eat kidneys.
Can you serve on your dishes, or is that like a different
thing? Yeah. Mikra, good kidneys doesn't trade for dishes, doesn't come up dishes. Okay? Just be careful not to eat. So, Meikra did, if it's really, really small crumbs, it's not really a problem. There's a lot of alumnus about that question, whether the cutoff point is really kazayas or whether even a significant size crumb. Yeah, you're not mechuyev to drive yourself mamish. When you vacuum, so anything serious is going to be gone. So you look under the bed, you look in the closets. A good place to look is in kids. There are certain places where inevitably you're going to find something. You look at kids' coat pockets, that's a good place to find. You know, you look in school, in knapsacks, it's a gewaldige place. You find lunches from last year's Chumash Shabbat Pesach. So those are good places to look. That's right. Right. So those are good places to look. Okay? Vinegar, well, it depends. It depends where the vinegar is coming from. There are different kinds of vinegar. Vinegar could potentially be grain vinegar, it could be corn vinegar, it could be wine vinegar. So if it's literally grain vinegar, then it could be chametz. But in America, the overwhelming majority of the vinegar is not that. It's corn vinegar. So that means, like most of the products that we have, let's like the ketchups and salad, all that stuff, needs a kosher Pesach, but not because there's any real chametz in them. Most of it is just because it's corn-based, the vinegar.
So you don't need to get rid of it.
So you don't really have to get rid of that, right. So kidneys, things which are not really chametz, you're allowed to, you don't have to mamish to lock away, but it's just bad idea. It's bad policy to leave that kind of stuff in your closet. You're inevitably going to use it. So I would say, put all your kidneys and all your chametz, put it all away in the same closet and just, you know, keep it locked up. But you're allowed to technically own that kind of stuff in Pesach.
White vinegar.
White vinegar. I don't think that I don't know how much grain vinegar is even made in America today. The best of my knowledge is that in America, unless you know to the contrary, the vinegar that's made in America is almost always corn vinegar. I mean, for those who have the practice, some of the practice not to sell chametz means they get rid of all the real chametz. They could still hold on to the salad dressings and the ketchups and the mustard, that kind of stuff, right? No, put it away, or put it in a bag in the fridge, you know, put it in a bag or something like that.
Nobody,
that's right.
What if you use vinegar for cleaning?
Yeah, the vinegar for cleaning is not a problem. The vinegar for cleaning is corn-based vinegar.
Sorry, just in terms of the three things that's throwing me off, in terms of the chametz that we put away, right. Can it be in my kitchen, just clothes with the sign?
Real chametz are just, you know, spices, that kind of stuff. Any real chametz should be put aside in a closet, where the closet should be closed off, should be taped up and locked up. Oil is not chametz. I mean chametz, I'm talking about cereals, I'm talking about pasta, I'm talking about real schnapps, those kinds of things. That's real chametz.
What products are better to buy before being
done
because of like a
bottle issue? A bottle issue. There is a minute Yisrael to buy milk before Pesach. So if wait, hold on. There's a minute Yisrael to buy milk beforehand. Whether it's absolutely necessary, it's very, very questionable whether it's really necessary to actually do that, but the minhag is to do that. If one wants to buy milk on Pesach, so you can definitely buy the Chol Yisrael milk on Pesach itself, because it's from before Pesach. That's really good. I didn't say as to what it's going to taste like, I just said it's from before Pesach. That's all. When the milks that say on them OUP are no different than basically any other milks, in the sense of that the minhag is to try to buy them also before Pesach. Eggs, there was a minhag at one time in history to buy eggs before Pesach. It's probably not relevant to Zman Hazeh. There are still people who... What? I tell people, including my own wife, when we run out of eggs and there aren't enough eggs for the second days, then we buy eggs on Pesach. Okay? All right? It's... The whole thing probably doesn't apply to Zman Hazeh. It was when they used to mamash feed the chickens really, really chametz. They're feeding the chickens are eating corn today.
Can we just clarify that, though? Let's say salad dressings, ketchup, and things like that. Yeah. If we have them in the fridge, can we put them in a bag?
Yeah, if they're not real chametz, if there's anything that's just kidneyless issues that are not real chametz, so then you can just put them in a bag and leave them in the fridge. But it should just be marked very well. It says, don't eat. Okay? Even if they're open.
Yeah.
No, any milk is fine. Any milk for Pesach is fine.
And dairy products because of the milk situation?
Because of the what?
Dairy products.
No, but all the other dairy products are going to be kosher Pesach. You're not going to buy cheese as that kosher Pesach. All the...
No, I understand. I'm saying, is there a minhag to buy those before Pesach too?
No. All that stuff was made way before Pesach. It's fine. The only chashash of the milk was if Lu Yitzu that the milk was actually milked on Pesach, so there's a maybe a chashash on the milk. Maybe. It's a very far-fetched chashash. It's a very, very far-fetched chashash. Okay. But, so let's move out of the realm of getting the house ready. And one last thing we should say in terms of the house ready for those who are Nachem Yom for Pesach. So those who are Nachem Yom for Pesach, and I mean the Nachem Yom Lagamer for Pesach, so then obviously they don't have to kash in the kitchen for anything, but they still, of course, are bound by the mitzvahs of by Ravei Motzei and the Isser of owning Chametz and the mitzvah of Dikas Chametz. So they have to also make sure, first and foremost, make sure that this Chametz is sold properly. And if nobody is using the house for the entire Pesach, then they can technically leave their chametz all around, and they're not coming back. So that's like chametz in front of, you know, like a barrier. The barrier is the front door. If people are going to be using the house on Pesach, so then they cannot have chametz lying around in the hefkevelt. Even though someone's coming for the first days, the last days, for Shabbat, whatever it is, if the house is going to be used by somebody on Pesach, then the house must be cleaned 100% properly. If you're going to run away for the entire week, so then there are different methods of how to yes, to B'dikas Chametz, and not to B'dikas Chametz, or a partial B'dikas Chametz. It's a little bit complicated, so your husbands will definitely be in contact with me about the different methods of how to do a B'kitzer version of B'dikas Chametz for those who will be away for the entire place. That's only true if the house is completely empty. Not you and not anybody else is going to be staying there. In terms of, I just want to speak just a few minutes just about inyanim related to the Seder, whether you're home or away, so it's hopefully the same Seder. So just the basic mitzvahs that one should be familiar with. Basically, all the mitzvahs of Pesach night apply equally to women as well as to men, so including matzah, morah, dal kazed, etc. So we'll just go really, really quickly. We'll go through the whole Seder in 3 minutes or less. So when it comes to the mitzvah, the first of the mitzvah of Dalakosos, so men and women are obligated to drink 4 cups of wine for Dalakosos. There are different opinions whether grape juice is sufficient for Dalakosos. Those who want to be lenient have a right to be lenient, especially some women, sometimes it's difficult for them to drink wine, so if they feel that they want to follow those opinions, who will maintain that grape juice is okay, so then they have a right to do so. one should be careful when one drinks each of the dalakosas, that one should try to drink most of the cup. One should, it's not enough to just take a little bit of a sip. One should really try to, you don't have to take a tremendous cup, but make sure the cup has a revius. Revius is about 3 ounces, around 3 ounces. One should try to drink a rove of the kosas, the majority of about 1.5 ounces or so of grape juice or wine at each of the appropriate points. The mitzvah, the two most important mitzvahs that we have at the Seder are the two mitzvahs, the Araisa, one of Achilas Matzah, and one of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. So the mitzvah of Achilas Matzah is performed a little bit in kind of three different ways. The first is the main mitzvah in HaTorah, and that's the mitzvah of Motzi Matzah. What is required in HaTorah, men and women, to eat a kezayis of matzah? How big is a kezayis of matzah? Depends on who you ask. So there are very many, many different modern day poskim how to extrapolate precisely how much a kezayis is. Approximately, the numbers are somewhere around, again, this is approximate, if you have a whole matzah, let's say a hand matzah, so somewhere around a quarter of a hand matzah is a kezayis, probably even a little bit less than that. One who is healthy and able to eat more, so I'll raise a meshubach, once you try to get a nice big, nice gezunta piece of matzah. Some poskim even say as much as a half of a matzah, again, it's very, very on the high end of how much a kezayis is. So one should try to eat at least something that's approximately a quarter of a hand matzah. Again, those who are healthy and able to should try to eat a little bit more than that. That we eat matzah 3 times at the Seder. We eat it at the first kezayis, then we eat it again at korech. So again, one should take a piece that's a kezayis, and we eat it again in afikomen. Each one of those three parts, one should be makpid to try to make sure to have a kezayis in matzah. There's a minhag to try to use red wine if one is able to. There are some poskim who prefer using the red wine. In Europe, there used to be some communities that had the minhag dafka to use white wine because they were afraid of blood libels. So Baruch Hashem, hopefully we don't have that problem here. So one should preferably use red wine. Again, those who use white wine, I can't say they're not yotze. It's preferable to use red wine. There are some poskim who prefer to use non-mevusha wine, not just for the Seder, but for all kiddushes. But I strongly recommend not to follow that practice, unless there are no goyim in the house at all. If you have mamish, no goyim, no housekeepers, nobody coming in, then you could use non-mevusha wine. If you think there's going to be any goyim around, you should use mevusha. I personally use mevusha wine at the Seder. I can't take any chances of stuff coming to life. That's a big question. That's a serious question. A very, very, and again, a nice question, but if you have people who are technically Jewish, but who are not observant at all, whether there's any chashash of them coming into contact with the wine is a little bit complicated, child. So I always recommend use Mavusha wine. You can rely on the post-kim hold Mavusha wine. It's fine. I use Mavusha wine. A lot of people use Mavusha wine. It's perfectly okay. Once you try to, if you're using wine, so if your husband's using wine, encourage them to use a very, very light, low alcohol wine. There's no great mitzvah to get tipsy at the Seder. So try to use a very low as possible as you can. In addition to the mitzvah of Achilas Matzah, there's a mitzvah of the Rabban of Achilas Morah. In the times of the Beis HaMikdash, Achilas Morah was min HaTorah, because as I said, we don't have a Korban Pesach, so Morah is not an independent mitzvah. But with the Rabban, it is a mitzvah. One is required to eat a kezayis of Morah. I strongly recommend that one should use for Morah the pre-checked romaine lettuce bags. Baruch Hashem, lo chaser, as I said, those days of sitting and checking romaine lettuce by the electric lights are long gone. And again, those who have nothing else to do in their Pesach, but the light boxes, so that's great.
Who did buy them?
No. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the Heimish, the Frumish brands. Yeah. What? Well. I'm talking about Bodeg, Positive, Ale Katif. I'm talking about the Jewish brands. I'm not talking about Dole with the little stickers that say you better check them. I'm talking about this. Okay. So again, it should be the ones that have already the greenhouse grown ones. The ones that have already don't really have to be checked. You should wash them off. But the ones that Mikra didn't don't really have to be checked. Okay. So those are the Lefinia's Dieti. Those are the only thing you should be really using for Laura.
Whole leaves or
things? They're chopped whole, whatever works. Whatever works. Matzah.
Yes.
Matzah, okay. So let me just finish Maror, then go back to Matzah. So Maror, there were some communities in Europe that had the practice of using using horseradish, using the white horseradish. So I can't say it's wrong. In Kedoli Olam, I great-great-grandparents, I always used horseradish. There is a question whether horseradish is actually technically considered to be an acceptable form of maror. The reason in Eastern Europe that they used it, because they partially didn't have anything else. Nothing else grew, so that was their last resort. So again, there are some poskim who raise a question about the horseradish, and other poskim perfectly accepted it. So again, those have a family minhag to use horseradish, can use horseradish, but it's very hard to be yotzei with horseradish, because you have to eat a kazayis horseradish. It's very hard to do that. And it has to be the mamish ground fresh horseradish. One cannot use white horseradish from a jar, because it's already been vinegar mixed with it, which cancels the status of moror. You can't use a red, a gold, horseradish, and you can fill the fish. You can use it for your filter fish, but not for your moror. So one should own, if one uses horseradish, so you want to use a little bit of a token, make a little bitter, that's fine, but the real mitzvah of moror, the only realistic way to do that, and for most people, is to lettuce. So one should try to eat a kazayis of lettuce at the point of chilas mar, and then once again at the time of kairich. Going back to the matzahs, so there are different traditions in Klal Yisrael whether to use hand matzahs or machine matzahs. So most people use at the seder, they use hand matzahs. There are some real hardcore misnagdim use machine matzahs even at the seder. At the seder, it has to be shmur matzahs. That's no matter whether you use hand or machine, it has to be shmur matzahs during the rest of the week. So there are different opinions in the Rishonim. We pass a mikra din, one does not have to have only shmur matzah during the week. There are some who are machmer to have it, and Shitas Rambam. There are some who are machmer to have shmur matzah the entire week. It's a fairly expensive chumrah, but those who want to follow it's a beautiful thing. But again, no, those who don't want to follow it, it's understandable. Right. Right, that's what I said.
So I
gave it very, very approximate. I mean, different matzahs, I could say different brands are much thicker than others. Haredi matzahs are very, very thin, and some of the pupa matzahs are fairly thick. There are different brands are different. So it's hard to give an absolute number. Okay, take a good, nice piece of matzah.
And what's the approximate shear for the romaine lettuce?
Romaine lettuce? They send you a chart, no? But it's two leaves, barach, two big fat leaves. My stomach looks like his eyes to me. I don't know. You have to, look at a leaf, look at an olive, and you see it doesn't look that. Looks like a half. It's not so big. It's not so much. I like romaine lettuce. So I eat a lot of romaine lettuce. Every year, my wife tells me I buy too much romaine lettuce for the seder. So I said it's good, but whatever's left over, we have salad for the whole week. So I'm sure. Okay, we start pinching pennies for romaine lettuce. So again, the other main mitzvah that we have at the Seder is Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, also a mitzvah that we assume the women are also obligated in. So one has to be sure to fulfill this mitzvah properly. Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim means you have to say over the God and tell over the story and try to elaborate a little bit, each in the best of the best ways. One is also obligated in saying Hala, both men and women. A lot of women don't know this, that they're obligated, a lot of men don't know this, they're obligated to say every word of Hala. When I say every word, it's like Chris and Megillah. If you miss a word, you're not Yotze. So we have to say the whole Hala. Most of the Hala, the beginning of Hala said it to be before Motzi Matzah, but the bulk of the Hala said at the end, when people are tired and kids are kvetching, things are happening at the end of the Seder. So whatever it is, men and women have to make sure, and children of Gila Chinuch should make sure to say the entire Hallel, word for word, as best as they're able to. Okay? Any particular questions about any halachas of Pesach? And then we give a little bit of Divrei Chizuk, hopefully, and then we'll take a tour of the kitchen. I'm not sure what I'm going to show you. I have no idea what I'm going to show you in the kitchen. But as long as you're listening. You can be out to it, Shemek on, as long as you're listening. If you're listening to every word. It should be sold. Whoever owns the school should be selling it. Yeah, it should tell them to sell it. Yeah. I mean, regular flour itself is probably not really chametz, but it should be sold. Quinoa, yeah. Quinoa, no. As of the last 2-3 years, the OU approved the quinoa, so I'm not gonna argue with them. So, I mean, we don't use it because it just doesn't look pasty to me. But it's more.
Question about roasted food.
Right. Put a lot of water in. I always tell my mother-in-law, she likes to make turkey for the seder. I say, just put a lot of water in it. Put a lot of water in it. She cook with water. I know, but still, it shouldn't be. Most poskim say that the minig, it's a minig not to eat roast. Most poskim say that the minig Yisrael is not to eat roasted, even if it's not roasted in the oven. You can roast it on the stovetop also. So if there's a lot of water in it, that's not called, that's called cooked. Yeah, a lot of water. Yeah. When I was a kid, we only ate boiled chicken, soup chicken at the Seder. That was it. And it was unheard of to eat anything else. But now we've moved on. First, yeah, first 2 nights of the Seder. I mean, how, what age do children have to observe the minhag? Little children don't have to observe the minhag. You know, once they give a chinuch, I think, once they're old enough that, yeah. I mean, you're not going to be making, I don't know how much you're going to be eating kibrachs in the house, you know, you need to them to buy products and stuff. Yeah. Tough me to answer that. We eat kibrachs.
But there's also like the
clues
of the minhag of Maggie Matzah.
Yeah.
Once
a kid is a Gil Lechinuch, so is a, you know, kid understands, he knows how to sing Manashtani, he understands a little about the Seder. I'm talking about on-air pace, but I'm talking about a month before.
And what if there's like, issue, like a kid has severe lactose intolerance and their food
situation
is limited, like
Matzah Shira,
does that work?
We're talking about on Erev Pesach itself. Erev Pesach, Mamish itself. Erev Pesach itself, so if it's kid, if a kid can't eat anything else, he's allowed to eat Matzah Shira, he can eat Matzah on Pesach also, if he doesn't have other foods
there.
Yeah, so let me eat egg matzah. Gluten-free, right. You just have to be careful not to use them for the Seder, right. Means they're not yotzi for the Seder. They're not matzah. What are they made of?
Tapioca.
Yeah, I've seen them in the store. I never tasted them. Okay, we'll save it for the Sukkot Shira. Okay.
Is yeast
chametz? Yeast is technically not chametz. We don't use any of these products in Nakosh Lebesach, but it's not itself. No, just put it in the closet.
Okay, so
Eitan for Kedron
Shiva, they come home with the gutters that are
Right.
So there's, you know, it's always an issue that, like, my husband discussed, like, what can we really skip in there? Because, you know, by 2:30 in the morning, we want to drink ourselves.
2:30 in the morning. I don't know what's going on in your house. 2:30, I am fast asleep. Right, so we always try to, you know, tell them. Yeah, say, that's always that chutzlar, it's mentality. Save it for the second Seder, save it for Shavuot, save it for lunch, you know. By lunch, they never remember anyway. Yeah, we always do the same thing, yeah. Save it for tomorrow. Famous last words, yeah. I mean, unless it's a...
We try.
You said they didn't do that.
No. It's fine. You tell your kid, you can't bring that guy to the table because it's chametz. You can't take it. No. Yeah, it's all right. Shake it out. Looks good. Okay. All right. I just wanted to give just a little bit of maybe the rechizuk, you know, because... Otherwise, it was false advertising. This is the not halachic part of the Shia. Pesach is the most beautiful time of the year. I didn't say there's not a lot of work. Even just telling from the questions, Baruch Hashem, everyone's getting all weary and, you know, ready to go. That's beautiful. But Pesach is the most wonderful, most beautiful, beautiful, beautiful time. The memories that you will impart to your children about Pesach will last them a lifetime. Haraya. 45 years later, I still remember my mother over the sink, and I still remember the refrigerator. I still remember every last point of Pesach, I remember. And it's mamish an opportunity, the most precious of relationships, of father to son, mother to son, mother to daughter, father to daughter. The parent-child relationship is the most precious, most beautiful, you know, ability to transmit our Mesorah. That Baruch Hu trusted us as we all become Rebbeim on Pesach night. We all become Moros on Pesach night. Not just Pesach night, everything that goes into the before and the after and during. It's mamish a chance for us to transmit our beautiful Mesorah to the next generation. There's nothing more beautiful and more precious than that. And I think it's dafka because of the significance, and maybe on a personal note, because of those beautiful memories that I have of Pesach, why it's painful I can't think of another word. It's painful to see that sometimes that gets lost in the shuffle. That when a child associates Pesach with other kinds of things which are not intrinsically bad, but have absolutely nothing to do with Pesach. They have to do with vacation, nothing to do with Pesach. It's very, very hurtful. It's nothing short of tragic. I think as parents, people who will, Baruch Hashem, appreciate and understand and have maybe those fond memories of going back from Dori Doros. When I say fond memories, I'm talking about, I still remember, not just my mother, but my grandmother, Hashem. She would sit and make charoses, and the same thing, out of all the things she brought from Europe, she brought three things from Europe. One of them was a charoses masher. Okay, so it's still sitting in my parents' house from I don't know where in Europe. This is from Poland, from the 1700s. It could be worth $1 million, I have no idea. Still, she would smash charoses in it. These are memories that can never, ever, ever be substituted. All the thrills and all the frills and all the things that all the advertisements could never touch the charoses maker ever. I think that it's something that behooves us to, as best as we can. I totally understand that. I understand that sometimes people are in very, very difficult situations, sometimes difficult family situations, that find themselves that have to be perhaps in certain places that are just not matim to some of the things that I'm talking about. And I understand it, and the last thing I'd want to do is to make sure I'm biased issues with parents and in-laws and grand. And I understand they're sometimes very extenuating. So I understand. I really, really do. But afal b'chein, it just means that those people who find themselves in circumstances where maybe some of the real lessons of Pesach are lost in the shuffle, not in bad things, just in things that have just nothing to do with Pesach, have to make the extra mamats, have to make the extra effort. It's not a p'tur. It means you have to work harder. It means that if a person finds themselves in a situation where maybe Pesach is not in the air like it should be, you have to make the extra effort. And you have to stop your kids, and you have to train your kids, and you have to talk to them more about Pesach. Pesach is not just a Seder. Seder is a couple hours. You have to get them more into the air of Pesach, and whatever it is, and whether it means more emphasis, make a better B'dikas Chametz, or make a more out of B'dikas Chametz, and let them, send your sons to the Mechiras. Think of something. It's got to be something. They have to know that Pesach is Pesach. They have to have some, whatever it is. And whether it means a particular activity, maybe Erev Pesach is not the time for activity X, Y, and Z. But Erev Pesach, if you happen not to be home, maybe it's a time to find a way to somehow talk to them about some of the significant things about Pesach. Whatever shape or form a person is, a person's home, Matzah, if the person is for whatever reason not home, it's not a potter. It doesn't take away from that significance. It would be a tragedy of tragedies for a generation of Jewish children. I'm talking about Shomer Tar Mitzvahs. It's a tragic tragedies for the non-Shomer Tar Mitzvahs, don't know what Pesach is. That's tragic of tragedies. But I'm talking about within the world of Shomer Tar Mitzvahs, that a generation of children are being raised who don't have an inkling what Pesach is. They don't know. Not that they don't know what chametz is, not that they don't know what it means to sing manishtana, not that they don't know what it means to sit down. They know that, but they still don't know what Pesach is. They don't have not experienced what it means to sit with a grind in charoses. They haven't experienced what it means to celebrate in a atmosphere that's matim for the celebration of becoming Avdei Hashem. We at the top of our lungs, we say Halu Avdei Hashem. That we are celebrating Zman Chirusein. We're celebrating. This is the beginning of our Avedas Hashem. So our Avedas Hashem has to take place in our Bate Midrashos, in our Bate Knesios, in our homes. And those we spoke those were at Midrash this morning about the Mishkan of our homes. That's the eco place of our Avedas Hashem. Again, if for whatever reason a person isn't in that setting, it doesn't exempt him or her from just working harder. That's all. Going the extra mile to make sure that the kids get whatever shape or form that Halu Avdei Hashem is able to impart. We can't be moichel on the Yom Tov Pesach. We cannot let a generation of Jewish children, from Jewish children, have no shaychus to this tradition, to this Messiah that's been going on for 3,000 plus years. It's heartbreaking. That's why sometimes I speak about it and I break into tears. We have to appreciate how significant it is. It sets the stage for the chinuch for our children for a lifetime. That what Pesach means to them is going to affect their status as Avdei Hashem for their entire life. There's not a question in my mind about that. So we have to think really, really hard every time, any decision that we make about what our yontif is going to look like, we have to think really, really hard. Each in their own way, and each in their own place. And, whatever shape or form we're able to do it, but we owe it to our children. We owe it to the next generation of Klal Yisrael to transmit the Yom Tov Pesach, Kedas HaChodim, the same way we received it from our parents, from our grandparents, from our Deri Deris, back to that first Seder in Tzitz Mitzrayim. We cannot sell them short. We cannot trade in Yom Tov Zman Chayroseinu for a bowl of lentil soup, like Esav sold away. It's just not worth the price. So each in their own way, each person will be mechazik in their own way, men and women and children together, to turn Zman Chayroseinu into the proper expression of the Yisrael. Okay? Now we'll head to the kitchen for those who want to see demonstration. I have no idea what I'm showing in the kitchen, but we'll make believe.